opportunity knocks and they're too busy complaining about the noise at the front door to go open the door and let opportunity in. They're always complaining about their lack of, instead of looking at the phenomenal opportunities that are around us every day. And they're there in abundance. All we need to do is start looking for them and then be willing to accept them.
The Doberman Dan Show.
The Doberman Dan Show.
For renegade entrepreneurs. Get ready for the uncensored,
nothing held back,
no BS reality of how business and life really work. Leave the sheeple to their lives of quiet desperation and get ready to experience an exhilarating life of unbridled freedom. Now prepare yourself, because Doberman Dan's off the leash.
Hey, what's up, renegade entrepreneur? Welcome back to another episode of the Doberman Dan Show for renegade entrepreneurs. I'm excited to introduce you to my special guest, Stan Ballew. Two things, got to tell you real quick. Number one, yes, the sound quality is not my usual standards. The technology that allegedly makes our life easier was not working correctly, as it often does. So we had to do this old school style. We got on the phone and recorded it. So it's got that FBI wiretap sound kind of vibe to it. Who knows? Maybe that'll enhance your listening experience, make you really feel like you're eavesdropping on something secret and private. But regardless, the information is awesome. So you're going to love it. Number two, Stan and I got a little long-winded. That was mostly my fault, because when you get a living legend on the phone, and he's willing to share, lifelong secrets with you, you take advantage of it while you got it. So this one's a two-parter, and let's get the show on the road with part one.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Doberman Dan Show for Renegade Entrepreneurs. I'm excited today because we've got the opportunity to learn from a living legend, Stan Ballew. How you doing, Stan?
I am fantastic. Thanks for asking, Dan.
You know, I've known about you for years. I've never made steps. We talked about this earlier. I never made steps to reach out to you. And I've been on a little journey here myself, I've gotten pretty good at selling in print, but I really needed help selling in person or from the stage or from the phone. So my friend Ben Settle has spoken so highly about you. I finally reached out to you recently, and little did we know that we only live like a half hour from each other.
Amazing. It's a small world, isn't it?
It is. I probably should have just invited you to lunch and brought a recorder for this call, but whatever, we're doing it now. So, well, thanks for being on the call.
You're more than welcome. Just be careful about, you know, what Ben tells you. You can't believe everything.
Yeah, well, you know how Ben is. He'll listen to this too, by the way, so he'll enjoy that. You do a much better job of telling your story than I do, and it's a story filled with lots of interesting experiences. So anyway, I'm dying to know, and all my listeners are going to love this. They're going to love to know about how you got started in your business. And when I say you're a living legend, I'm not exaggerating. A lot of people in the sales training profession that are, you know, household names and are famous were either inspired by you, totally ripped you off, or maybe even mentored by you. So I want to hear the whole story.
Well, thank you for the kind words. And there are a lot of trainers out there and speakers that do give me a lot of credit, which I appreciate. You know, again, all I can be is a catalyst. Someone else still needs to do it. But the way I got started, interestingly enough, and it's going to sound like one of my seminars that I used to do, but I was basically a self-made failure for 34 years. I had been a high school dropout, divorced twice, never bankrupt. And in July of 1977, my higher power brought a mentor into my life. He was a self-made multimillionaire. And interestingly enough, he had been a high school dropout. He was actually married and had three kids before he was 18. Two of them were a pair. It's not quite as bad as it sounds. But and he had made his first million by the time he was 21 and became a multimillionaire by the time he was 23. So I guess I could relate to him in that regard, being a high school dropout and everything. And, you know, at certain times in our lives, Dan, we are ready, willing, and able to accept change. And other times we fight it like a banshee. And at the time, my higher power brought him into my life. I was driving a 15-year-old Volkswagen that I had to park on a hill to get started. I was living on macaroni and cheese for three straight months. You know, a gourmet meal to me was being able to buy a pack of hot dogs and cut them up into the macaroni and cheese. And I was so broke I couldn't pay attention. And some of these will go by quick. But when he offered to become my mentor, I was ready. And I bought into it, so to speak, hook, line, and sinker. I didn't doubt him. I didn't challenge him. I literally followed every advice to the T. If he told me to walk through the wall, I'd make money. I didn't question him about, well, won't that hurt, or isn't there a better way, or shouldn't I walk around it, or, you know, I would just do it. And it started off with three magic words that he taught me, and that is knowledge is power. He got my attention by saying, you know, Baloo, he said, I've never seen such a waste of talent. That'll get your attention. He said, you know, you've got a fairly good gift of gab or BS. You got a fairly good appearance, but, you know, and you got all these ideas, all these irons in the fire, but nothing ever gets done. Nothing ever, you don't follow through to fruition. You don't complete anything. He said, listen to me. If you don't ever learn anything else, listen to this. The University of California did a study that if you invest an hour a day studying any one subject, that within 3 years you'd have the equivalent of a college degree in that one subject. And within 5 years, you'd be a world-renowned expert. And, of course, I ask what we all ask. Well, what's in it for me? What's that going to do for me? He said, Stan, in 5 years, my God. He said, you could write articles and books and you put out recordings and you could travel the world and companies will pay you enormous amounts of money for your knowledge in that one area. And I said, okay, that kind of beats the hell out of whatever game plan I've been on for 34 years. So I said, all right, what do I become a world expert in? He said, oh, he said, pick one of the highest paid professions in the world. I said, yeah, right. What, brain surgery? He said, no, selling. I said, wait a minute. I'm friggin' manic depressive. I'm bipolar. You know, I hate rejection. Why would I get into a profession where I'm going to be rejected all the time? I hate it. He said, you don't have to love to be rejected. He said, just learn everything you can about selling, and then you can go out and teach other people how to be rejected. I said, okay. So to make a long story short, I started investing an hour a day to learn from the masters. And this goes way back, you know, 1977, J. Douglas Edwards, the dean of American sales trainer, the Fred Herman, the master of selling by asking questions. Of course, Zig was just getting some popularity back then, the pots and pan salesman. But I started learning all I could about selling, negotiating, the use of the English language. And interestingly enough, I set a very lofty goal. One was to become, was to double my income for five consecutive years in the profession of selling, which I did. And I love to say, I don't care where you start, that fourth and fifth year get real friggin' exciting. And at the end of 5 years, my second goal was to become a speaker and trainer. And interestingly enough, I became a speaker and trainer. And for a little over 20 years, traveled the world doing up to 22 engagements a month. And guess what? Companies paid me enormous amounts of money for my knowledge in that one area of selling. So that's wow. my story, and I'm sticking to it.
It sounds like when your mentor proposed that you invest that hour a day in learning selling, that did you have the negative connotation of being a salesman that a lot of people do? Like, a lot of people have the stereotype of the used car salesman in the plaid leisure suit, you know, the really sleazy kind of image. Is that what your gut reaction was when he suggested that?
Well, that was part of it. And the other part was, as I mentioned, you know, I was bipolar and a manic depressive, so I hate being rejected. I hate the negative, you know, and in selling, we get rejected and face more negatives than virtually any other profession on a daily basis. And so, you know, I wasn't excited about doing it, but, you know, I bought into it because that's how he did it. And if he could do it, I felt I could do it, if not better.
You know, I'd like to go back just to point out several things you said, because there was a wealth of knowledge in just your describing your backstory. First of all, isn't it interesting how I say that, isn't it interesting, with a bit of sarcasm. Isn't it interesting that how when the student is ready, the teacher appears?
The teacher appears. Oh, you know, there's certain truisms that I just call universal truths that you don't fight. You know, it's like gravity. You know, if you jump off of a 10-story building and every floor on the way down you keep saying, so far I'm okay, you know, eventually you're going to go splat. You just don't argue with it. And you don't argue with gravity. You know, you don't argue with certain universal truths. And that is one, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. There are opportunities up the wazoo for people that miss them all day long. You know, opportunity knocks and they're too busy complaining about the noise at the front door to go open the door and let opportunity in. They're always complaining about their lack of, instead of looking at the phenomenal opportunities that are around us every day. And they're there in abundance. All we need to do is start looking for them and then be willing to accept them.
That's so true. I said the other day to somebody, they didn't get it at first, but I said, I find whatever I'm looking for. And I wasn't being arrogant, like I've got some kind of special power. It's just that I've discovered no matter what I look for, I find it. If I want to find evidence that this is a cold, cruel world and people are terrible, there is no lack of that. I can find that anywhere. If I want to find evidence that basically people are good, caring people, they want to help you, and you know, they're just fellow travelers along in this journey on life. You know, I find evidence of that too. So it seems like yeah. whatever you're focused and looking for, you can find.
You know, that's a great segue, Dan, into two points I want to make. The second thing that my mentor taught me is that I could control my attitude. I mean, I've been through all the drug, the electric shock treatments. I've been locked in the little padded cage. A little flashback there, you know, for my manic depressive. And, you know, he taught me that I could control my attitude by what I chose to feed my mind. So don't hang around with negative people. Don't watch negative news. Don't sit there and you know, pollute your brain with Jerry Springer or some of this other crap that's out there. Instead, choose what you feed your brain. And that's one reason I have the word fantastic. When you ask me how I'm doing, if I don't say fantastic, I have to pay you a $100 bill. And it's because my mentor that taught me to pick out a magic word or power phrase that you'll have the opportunity to use 50, 100, or more times a day when people say, hey, how's it going? How you been? How you doing? What's up? Instead of whining at them like, well, not bad for a Tuesday, or okay, or fine. We can use a magic word or a power phrase. We can say, great, awesome, super, fantastic. If I was any higher in life, I could go duck hunting with a rake. I don't care what you say, but a couple of interesting things happen. Number one, it gives us something to live up to. If we tell 50 or 100 people a day that we're awesome, how could we now be negative? We'd be the biggest hypocrite in the world. The second thing is we start to believe it. As you know, Dan, we all have a conscious, subconscious mind. The subconscious mind is awake 24/7 from the day we're born till the day we die, does not have the ability to doubt or reason. Subconscious mind believes everything you program into it. So if you program into it 100 times a day, you're awesome, subconscious mind starts taking over and says, well, this turkey thinks he's awesome. Okay, let's make it an awesome day. And the third thing you'll do is you'll drive people friggin' nuts. Watch what happens. You walk into a grocery store and you're checking out, and the clerk happens to say, how's your day going? Fantastic. They don't know how to handle it. I have people all the time say, every time we talk to you, you're fantastic. Every time, everything in your life is fantastic. Hell, don't you ever wake up grumpy? Hell no, I let her sleep.
And the second swipe that joke from you, but I'm
no, go ahead, because
would kick my ass.
I swiped it from somebody else. Believe me, we all steal from each other. The second point that I wanted to segue into was you can find whatever you're looking for. At my age, when I wanted to do research when I was younger, I had to jump on one of those vehicles called a bus, go across town to one of those big buildings called a library. Today with the internet, my God, you can get on there and in 10, 15, 20 minutes find whatever you're looking for. And, I mean, what a great way to learn. All the great speakers, trainers, copywriters. I mean, you and I share one common bond in the fact that you were trained by one of the masters, Gary Halbert. Bless his soul, he's long and gone, but all of his stuff is still on the internet and available. So whether it's a mentor, a coach, a copywriter, a sales trainer, a motivational speaker, a self-development person, whatever, all of them basically have websites, and most of them give away a lot of free material just to hook you, if you will, so you'll enter your email address so that hopefully they can sell you something down the line. But there's a wealth of information out there. I mean, there's no reason for anyone to not make a commitment to become great at something. Maybe you don't want to invest an hour a day and you don't want to be a world expert in 5 years, but why not? Why not? You're going to be 5 years older in 5 years anyhow. Why not be able to write your own paychecks? Why not have total control of your financial destiny? And it's there for you to learn.
That's absolutely right. I love what you said. In 5 years, you're going to be 5 years older anyway. So why not invest the time instead of, people who start getting up to, I'm approaching 50, people start getting up to that age start saying like, I'm going to be 50. In 5 years, I'm going to be 55. Well, yeah, you ain't going to stop that. But if you invest the hour a day to master whatever it is you want to master, you'll be 55 and have those skills under your belt. So why not start today?
Yeah, you're never too old. And interestingly enough, I never quit at the end of 5 years. Next month, July 12th, I will celebrate my 37th anniversary of investing an hour a day to become just a little better today than I was yesterday.
There's a lot of wisdom in that one principle. The thing that sprung to mind when you first said that was, and of course, we spoke about that via email too, is I have nephews that are in college. And you know what? For some people, college is great. I couldn't afford it. I barely made it through high school. But there's a lot of kids going to college for 4 years and leaving $100,000 or more in debt that have no skills that they can monetize in any way. I mean, they're $100,000 in debt, and they're going to be lucky to get a job making coffee at Starbucks.
I hear you.
I'm not saying to not go to college. I'm just saying to maybe evaluate and give some thought to what you're saying, Stan, that investing an hour a day in learning a highly valuable skill like selling. This is just my opinion. I don't want to get a bunch of pissed off emails from parents who are sending their kids to college right now, but it seems like a much better investment of time, and you don't have the debt, you know, to do that rather than go to college.
It's a proven formula, and you know, I do coaching and mentoring. As you know, I have clients all over the world in Switzerland, Australia, South Africa, England, Switzerland, United States, of course, Canada. And one of the things that we work on is, you know, where do you want to be in 3 to 5 years? And, you know, is what, you know, the game plan you have now going to allow you to get there? And more often than not, we do regression. We go back to their school days or their, you know, when they were a youngster. What did you have a passion for? What did you have an interest in? What kind of hobby or sports or whatever that you kind of got away from for whatever reason? Because one of the secrets of success is when you have a passion for whatever it is you're doing. And more often than not, we can take somebody back and recapture that passion that they had about a hobby or area of interest and get them starting to invest that hour a day while they're still doing whatever it is they thought they wanted to do and, you know, progress to the point where in 3 years they'll have the equivalent of a college degree, and in 5 years they'll be a world expert in that one subject. And I don't care what it is. If you become a world expert, now granted, some industry, some businesses, whatever, some you might be more of a niche market, and there may not be the opportunity for financial riches per se, but, you know, how much good could you do for the world in certain areas if you were an expert in one area?
Absolutely. You know, you motivated me to what my number one passion actually was actually what I wanted to do for a living. I wanted to be a professional musician, and I specialized in the guitar. I love the guitar. I love learning new stuff on the guitar. But you know what, Stan? I have gotten – every morning I started out my day with learning something new on the guitar, and usually it was that I dedicated 33 minutes and 33 seconds to it. And it was so – it was such a great way to start the day, and it's so exciting to learn new things, and it was exciting to see myself progress. But – For a variety of reasons, one of them maybe not enough discipline or procrastination or just work seemed like it was a bigger priority. So I got out of that habit. You know what? You've inspired me to start that again first thing tomorrow morning, and I'm going to change my 33 minutes and 33 seconds to an hour.
And, any particular genre of music you like?
I grew up playing rock and pop, but now I'm totally in love with jazz.
Okay. All right.
And
again, with the internet?
Pardon?
I was going to say, with the internet, you could Google or Bing or whatever search engines you want, the top 10 jazz guitarist, whoever picked up an axe. And, you know, you could, many of them would have videos available. You can start to study their chops, their licks, their story, how they got started, how did they market themselves. You know, maybe you're too old to be to have a goal of going on the road and being an artist and drawing big crowds, but you might be able to do recordings. You might be able to do commercials. You might be able to put out a book on how to learn to play the jazz guitar in 10 easy lessons. That could be a book. It could be a video. You could set up a website. You know, there's other aspiring musicians that, you know, are in the same situation that you're in that would like some easy answers, you know. So
absolutely.
You never know where it's going to lead you. Interestingly enough, I recorded an album for a group back in the 70s and lost track of them over time. But come to find out, a year ago we reconnected with the lead singer. He still thanks me for giving him his break, so to speak, in the music business after, you know, failing several times in the rock genre. He ended up being probably the best unknown voice for singing for commercials in the country. And he's done commercials for, I mean, virtually a who's who of the Fortune 500. Names, you know, Goodyear, U.S. Army. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And so he's carved out a great niche just recording you know, musical jingles in his home studio. You never know where it's going to lead you.
You know, in the worst case scenario, well, I've seen the results of this in various aspects of my life when I was more disciplined with the guitar previously, and of course with copywriting. So, you know, now it's just a matter of getting back into the habit. So, you know, I'm a selfish bastard. I do these calls for myself, and I always come away with something great. But, yeah, you kind of slapped me back into reality that I need to get back into that habit, Stan. And the worst case scenario that can come out of it, it just makes me happy to start my day that way.
Exactly. I mean, what could make a person more happy than investing an hour in the morning doing something that you truly love, you have a passion for? And like you say, if you pick up just one lick a day, one chord progression a day, my God, you know, that's something you didn't know yesterday. And if you did that every day, you know, and they take Saturday and Sunday off, that's still, you know, 22 a month, that's 250 a year. That's 250 licks that you didn't have last year. You know, 250 ways that you can play better than you did last year.
Absolutely. In a year's time, that's amazing progression. And again, applies to everything. If anybody's listening to this and they want to be a better salesperson or copywriter or what, it's the principle applies to anything.
You got it.
You have,
I mean, virtually, you're not limiting yourself. Just whatever you want to become an expert in, you know, again, be realistic. The odds are you're probably not going to be an astronaut and walk on the moon. But, you know, how close can you come? You know, how much could you be worth if you learned everything you could about some aspect of NASA or, you know, space exploration or whatever? You know, it can be carpeting. It can be ceiling tile. It can be draperies. It can be fingernails. Whatever. You know, it can be a hobby, a sport, area of interest. It doesn't have to be anything earth-shaking. If you're an expert in it, there will be people out there that will pay you for your knowledge. Knowledge is power, and people pay for that knowledge every day, and particularly now on the Internet. The beauty is, about it is the world is your store. You can literally put together a website at WordPress or GoDaddy where they've got the software. It's basically called What You See Is What You Get, where you don't have to know any coding. You can get a domain name, put a website up in less than 24 hours, get a merchant agreement, and be selling stuff all over the world and start to establish yourself, brand yourself, and establish yourself as a recognized expert. And again, with social media, I know we may be getting off the track a little bit, but for entrepreneurs that are listening, with social media, to put yourself a Facebook page that's purely for your business. Don't show the pictures of yourself falling down drunk and all that. Save that for your personal site, but have a Facebook page for your business. Start a blog where you're posting, you know, interesting little tidbits about your industry or your knowledge. Join discussion groups. There's probably dozens, if not over 100 discussion groups on just about any subject that you want to pick. And you can establish yourself as an expert. You start writing and submitting articles. There's dozens of sites that will publish your article at no charge. Start putting out press releases. There's dozens of sites that will do it at no cost. You just have to invest a little time to learn how to do a press release. You know, put yourself a little video together and put it on YouTube. You know, it's just start a Twitter account. I mean, there's all of these little things that are just all part of branding and creating yourself as a world expert, if you will, in one subject.
That's so true. Stan, you have, I got so many questions that this could, I don't want to intrude upon your time. Who knows how long this thing could turn into, but, my listeners know I ask selfish questions. This is stuff I want to learn, and luckily, many of them want to learn it too. So it's my selfishness has a serendipity to it for other people. Do you have a complete course that's specifically about selling by phone? And it's something that I've struggled with. I'm just being honest. For some reason, selling in print, I don't say I'm a master of it. I like to say I'm mastering. I got that from Kenrick Cleveland because, you know, there's no way I've arrived. I'm still studying it every day. But I'm very comfortable selling in print and closing in print. But when I've gotten on the phone with people or when I've spoken from stage, I'm very uncomfortable with it. And selling by phone is something really important for us copywriters or people who want to coach people. And so have you got any tips that you could share about selling by phone? I know that's very general, but anything you have to say would be appreciated.
Well, two of my courses, the audio course is called Double Your Income Selling on the Phone. And then my video course is called 90 Telemarketing Skills. And interestingly enough, as I was doubling my income every year for 5 consecutive years in sales and planning on being a trainer at the end of that 5 years, I started looking around at who to study. And I believe at that time the National Speakers Association only had about 700 members, and it seemed like half of them were motivational speakers and the other half were sales trainers. And I looked a little further and I saw two people that mentioned something about the fact that they specialized in doing business over the phone. And so the light bulb went off to me, and I said, look, in 5 years, I don't want to be a small fish in the ocean, one of 750 other sales trainers. I wanted to be a whale in the pond, and all the studies I was reading back then saying that, you know, selling over the phone was going to explode. You can reach 10 to 15 to 20 times as many people in the same amount of time. And so I decided to position myself as a sales trainer who specialized in doing business over the phone. So everything that I could learn, and much of it I had to create, basically revolves around the fact that it has to be very structured. You have a limited amount of time on the phone as compared to usually face-to-face selling. Many times they're not expecting your call, and even if they are, something has popped up, so they claim they're too busy to talk or they're rushed. So you've got to have an interesting, creative opening, much like you do in copywriting, an interesting, creative, you know, interest-grabbing headline, if you will, followed up by a benefit statement or a question that relates to the fact that they might be lacking something. I mean, all the skills that you use in copywriting apply to selling. They really do. And just in selling on the phone, it just has to be a little more structured. You have to be prepared for their brush-offs when they say they're too busy or they already got one or they're happy with whoever they have or whatever. You've got to be prepared with a comeback. You've got to have your questions structured so that you can move into qualifying to find out what their needs are. I actually help teach people not to ask questions because they have a tendency to pry, prod, and probe and can be confrontational. Instead, I teach people to use instructional statements such as, share with me a little bit about your background. Well, if you look at that, that's not a freaking question. That's an instructional statement. I'm telling you what to do. You know, tell me a little bit about, bring me up to date on. Those are all lead-ins to instructional statements, and they sound much more conversational than confrontational. I also teach people how to use continuation phrases so that when they're done answering your question or your instructional statement, rather than just going to the next one on your list, understand the old adage that buyers are liars and that many of these prospects you're talking to have been qualified by other salespeople like you selling the same basic thing that you're selling. And so through the years, they've developed scripted answers to your scripted questions. So instead of buying into exactly what they said to answer your question or your instructional statement, we teach people to use continuation phrases like, interesting, tell me more. Please continue. Go on. And the odds are whatever they say next is closer to the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, because you just got them off of their script. Other than that, making a great presentation, being a performer, because in most cases you don't have something to demonstrate. All you have is your voice, this magical musical instrument, and the ability to put beautiful music out, which is the words we use and how that we use them. So just as you do with a musical instrument, you might occasionally speed up to create some urgency or to slow down where every word drips with emotion, or occasionally raise your voice to make a point or to talk so soft that they have to bend into the phone to hear every word. Now, again, is some of this hokey? Yes. Is some of it corny? Yes. Does it work? My God, yes. Because people want to be entertained. Why else would they watch the boob tube 2.5 hours a day, go to movies, concerts, sporting events? They love to be entertained. And rather than just educate them and be boring, learn to be a great storyteller. People will buy it when you tell them a story, when you get them emotionally involved. So, long answer to a simple question, but those are some of the basics that we teach.
You know, when you were in that period where you had doubled, you made the goal and you achieved it to double your income every year for 5 years, was a lot of that done by selling by phone, or was it in-person belly-to-belly or from the stage or all of the above? How did you do that? Because I don't know if – I just want to make sure people understand the what a major accomplishment that is. First of all, to double your income in 12 months is a huge deal. But then do that for 5 years straight – that's like approaching damn near, a Herculean effort.
Great question, Dan. Well, first of all, understand that I was driven. I became an animal. If the truth be known, it wasn't just an hour a day. It was 2, 3, 4, 5 hours a day. I was like a sponge. I found out that I don't like to study. I can read a whole paragraph, or let's say a chapter in a book and close it and not even tell you what the heck I just read, because my mind wanders. But I did find out that if you listen to a spoken word 16 to 21 times, that your subconscious mind absorbs up to 95% of it. So I became, back then, a tape junkie, a cassette tape junkie, where I would just listen to it over and over and over and over and over 16 to 21 times. Answer your question more specifically, the first 2 years was face-to-face selling. And
okay.
Each year when I sat down and said, okay, now I'm going to double my income, how can I work smarter instead of harder? How can I increase my closing percentage, my closing ratio? How can I write a larger order? What products or services can I sell where I can do more repeat business? What's an industry I can get into that might be more conducive for referrals? What industry can I get into that would be more conducive for larger orders, more repeat business, so on and so forth? So the last 3 years, I did get into telephone selling over the phone and started actually specializing in learning how to communicate and negotiate more effectively on the phone. So first two were face-to-face, last three were on the phone, and sold a variety of products, services face-to-face, belly button to belly button over the phone, business to business, business to consumer, inbound, outbound. I ran the gamut for those 5 years, but every year it was like, okay, what do I need to do to work smarter instead of harder? How can I improve? I was a numbers nut. I kept track of my dials. What percentage of contacts did I get out of dials? How can I get better at working around or through screeners or secretaries? How can I get transferred to a different department? How can I find the best possible time to reach the prospect instead of leaving a message and hope he's going to call me back? How can I improve my presentation rate so that, you know, I didn't get blown off the phone in the first 10, 15 seconds? How can I better overcome objections? How could I learn how to close? I mean, the average salesperson knows three closes and uses one, and that's their powerhouse. Well, what do you think? And 9 times out of 10, you hear this. Well, I think I want to think about it.
Think
just
about
them
it.
That
yeah.
God awful word. You know, thinking is common sense, logic, and rationale. People don't make decisions on common sense, logic, and rationale. They make it on emotion. So how does it look? How does it feel? You know, how does it sound? Maybe, but not what do you think? So anyhow, I became a master closing, and my audio tapes, I'm actually famous for 100 ways to close a sale. And like I say, the average salesperson knows three and uses one. So I had an arsenal, you know, not one or two ways to overcome, I want to think about it. I had over 24. So, I mean, I got on the phone, and my mindset was, hey, champ, I'm better prepared than you are. So you better be on your top, on your game, you know, or you know, you're dead meat. You're going to be in I'm going to get in your pocketbook.
Mm-hmm. You know, the poor suckers who've got one close, man, if that doesn't work, where do you go from there? You're stuck.
Yeah, and then they just end up repeating themselves. They're lost, so they go back and start talking about maybe some of the benefits again, and they're repeating themselves. And, hey, whatever you said the first time didn't work, so why repeat it again? Give them some new information. See, the one thing I learned way, way back is when somebody says no, they're just basically saying, based on the information you've given me so far, my answer is no. Can you give me some new information, and maybe I'll make a new decision based on this new information? So it's not arguing with them and high-pressuring them to change their mind necessarily. It's giving some additional information that allows them to make a new decision, to reevaluate it and see that what you're talking about really does make sense and can benefit them.
Did you, during that five-year period, were there markets or products that you specialized in, I guess what I'm getting at, were there certain markets or certain products that you felt were more conducive to experiencing that kind of what I call quantum leap growth?
Yeah, the third, fourth, and fifth year, when I got into selling on the phone, I did get into the investment arena. Because again, it's conducive to higher numbers. I mean, you're talking about the elite of the elite, somebody that can call somebody in Waterloo, Iowa, that has never met you, probably never will, and doesn't know anything about you. And based on one or two phone calls, they're willing to write you a check for $50,000 or $100,000 or $200,000. Good God, that's the best of the best.
And that
so,
is the major leagues there.
Yeah, and then the fourth and fifth year, I actually got into options, which provide an opportunity for the average investor to get an enormous amount of bang for their buck with a predetermined downside risk, unlike futures, which you can make a fortune or more likely lose a fortune, because 9 out of 10 people that invest in futures lose money. With an option, you still had the opportunity, depending on where you bought the strike price and at what month, you still had an opportunity to make some hellacious 5 and 10, 15, 20 times on your money. But with a predetermined risk, you could never lose more than the original cost of the option and the commission involved. And with the options, there you're talking about somebody where I could resell them every month. In some cases, I could resell the same player or investor every week. In some cases, Dan, I was able to sell them 2 and 3 times in the same frickin' day.
Wow.
So that's where business kicked in and the higher numbers kicked in.
And once you had established a clientele with that, did you have a rule of thumb of how often, instead of constantly prospecting for new people, that you went back to your established clients?
You're reading my mind, or you've done an enormous amount of research. Very astute question. I'll tell you a story. I became a master at referrals, to the point where I set records back in 82 and 83 that to this day probably still stand in the investment arena. I averaged over 40 new accounts each month. My record was 103 new accounts in 1 month. Now, and I have to tell your listeners, because I just lost a whole bunch of them. They're thinking
that's
the
you
there's
probably
no
blew
way.
All their minds.
Yeah, there's not enough hours in the day to make that kind of cold calls. You're right. The majority of those new accounts were referrals, because they're one of the 5 easiest sales in the world, and I became a master at getting referrals. And you talk about client control. You wanted to know, was you know, that I require that they buy so often or whatever. I never kept more than 100 to 120 clients in my book, which meant that if there was a new account bonus, which there usually was, I had to win it. I'm plaque prone. I had to have the plaque on the wall. I had to get the bonus check. But then, and because of that, many were opened, many accounts were opened at or near the minimum. I hate have trouble even pronouncing it. But those that were opened at or near the minimum, if they didn't buy again within 30 days, I reassigned them to another broker. I never kept more than 100 to 120 active clients. And these were people that literally, when I called up and told them to write a check, they said, how big? Not what are we buying or what? Well, how come or what? Tell me the story. It's just the total control that you can end up establishing with some people. Remember, 5% are leaders, 95% are followers. The followers need to be led, and as long as you're consistently performing for them and you're not lying, cheating, or stealing, and they understand you're not going to win every time, but that's why we invest maybe 10, 15, 20 times through the year. All we need is to be right a lot more than we're wrong. We cut our losses short, and we ride the winners.
You know, this is, wow, this is kind of creepy, but this is another example of when the student is ready, the teacher appears. I have just this week been doing a reevaluation of a lot of things in my business. And, you know, I'm a thick-headed guy, man. For some reason, I got to learn my lessons the hard way, and not just once either. And so I'm figuring out some strategy and coming to the point where I'm realizing, you know what, regularly, I just haven't worked out the time period to do it yet. Regularly, I'm just going to have to drop the 80% of my business, 80% of my clients, whether that's copywriting clients or, you know, consulting, coaching, or I've even been figuring out how to apply. I think I've got a plan to apply this to my paid newsletter subscribers, but I need to drop the 80% and focus on the 20% because the 20%, including the 20% of the 20%, whatever that is, I don't know, 4%, is responsible for most of my results. And it sounds like you'd figure that out decades ago by the non-performing or the lower performing clients, you passed them off to somebody else and only kept the ones in your Rolodex who were the 20 percenters. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, if you keep the whole book of clients, I found that what I was doing is holding hands. Like, they keep calling me, well, how come it's down today? Well, more people are selling than buying, evidently. I mean, what do you want me to tell you? If they wanted updates, they wanted me to hold their hand, and they wanted me to educate them. And finally, I put a little hotline together on a phone number where they could call in and get my little daily update for about a minute, minute and a half. I stole that idea from Howard Ruff and the Dine Sisters back then. They had a hotline they were charging for. I put mine up for free just to keep people from aggravating me and occupying my time, because when I picked up the phone, that was my cash register. I wanted to make a call. And I found out that, you know, when people called me, about the third time they'd call me and say, yes, Dan, this is Ralph. I got a question about the market. I said, Ralph, I was just getting ready to call you. We need to buy more, and here's why. And I'd start asking them to buy more, and they quit calling.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Doberman Dan Show for Renegade Entrepreneurs. That ends part one with Stan Ballew. Stay tuned for part two.
Thanks for tuning in. You were just listening to the Doberman Dan Show for Renegade Entrepreneurs. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review on iTunes. And also make sure to head over to DobermanDan.com and subscribe to all the free tools, tactics, and secrets to help build your business quickly so you can experience the Renegade Entrepreneur lifestyle. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes where our guests reveal their best secrets for financial independence and living a completely free lifestyle.